Team for tonight's newscast is Don Zer, Rosalind Scott, and Ken Jones. Special thanks to James Helmsworth. Our engineer is Mike Fotoklis. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Rosalind Scott. Here's what's coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. From 7 to 8 a.m., it's Democracy Now! News and analysis hosted by award-winning journalist Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Call-in talk radio with Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. At 9 o'clock, Alternative Radio with host David Barsimian. At 10, it's Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with host Chris Andre. Stay tuned to KBOO at 10:15 for Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, it's Stage and Studio with your host, D-May Roberts. On tomorrow's show, we hear that after 20 years as a veteran contemporary dance group in Portland, Conduit Dance has been evicted from their home. Finally, at 11:30, it's Arts Focus. Host Joseph Gallivan speaks with Jeffrey Thomas, owner of the new gallery Jeffrey Thomas Fine Art. They discuss The Sum of Its Parts, Part 2, and the development of the Portland art scene since he ran the Jameson Thomas Gallery with William Jameson in the 1980s.
Stay tuned now for an in-depth interview with the ACLU about the voter ID law. The Supreme Court announced today that they'd allow the voter restrictions to move forward. Good night, Rosalind.
Good night, Ken. Good night, Mike.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
We are joined on the line now by Sean Young, who's with the American Civil Liberties Union. And Sean, I wonder if you could start by giving us a little bit of background about the voter ID law that went to the Supreme Court that originated in Wisconsin. Then we'll talk about today's rulings.
Sure. So Wisconsin's voter ID law requires voters to present one of a few limited forms of identification if they want to vote. Limited list includes driver licenses and state-issued ID cards, but it does not include many other kinds of ID, like veterans' IDs, certain student IDs, as well as library cards or employee identification cards. This law was challenged by the ACLU, and the district judge enjoined the law in its entirety, but that decision had been reversed by the Seventh Circuit.
So what was the origin of this voter ID law? Were there incidents of people using false ID that then sparked this law to be passed in Wisconsin?
Not at all. This law's origins, in many ways, remains a mystery because, as you've noted, there are simply no cases identified in Wisconsin of voters pretending to be someone else when they vote. This law, like many other vote suppression laws around the country, came up notably after African American turnout surged to elect President Obama in 2008. I think it's fairly clear that these laws are passed in an attempt to deter certain groups of people from voting.
Well, and in fact, the impact that they do have disproportionately is on communities of color and minority communities, right?
That's absolutely correct. During the Wisconsin trial, we showed that people of color were 2 to 4 times more likely to lack ID compared to their white counterparts. They also have disproportionately lower incomes, are more likely to lack transportation, and so face even greater hurdles in trying to obtain ID.
Well, and I can imagine it would be an even greater burden for someone who is homeless or doesn't have a fixed address.
Oh, absolutely. In Wisconsin, we had folks who routinely work with people experiencing homelessness and trying to get them birth certificates so they can use those certificates to get ID. And they testified that they routinely ran into problems even helping people get birth certificates. They were missing, or bureaucracies in different states wouldn't be responsive to their requests. I'm sure that this can come as no surprise to many people who've had to wrestle with bureaucracies to try to locate certain documents.
So your group, the American Civil Liberties Union, appealed or filed a lawsuit challenging this voter ID law. What was the basis of your lawsuit?
Well, our lawsuit principally advanced two claims, in addition to some others I can get to in a moment. But the two claims principally were that the law imposed an unconstitutional burden on the right to vote for many of the state's citizens. Up to 10% of the state's registered voters lack one of the forms of ID required in the statute. The second claim was under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which alleged that this law had a disproportionate impact on African Americans and Latinos in Wisconsin. We also brought several other claims. We call them as-applied claims on behalf of groups such as veterans, students, people with out-of-state driver's licenses, and other groups for which there's no adequate justification for why those other forms of ID cards shouldn't be accepted.
So you sounds like you had made a pretty good case. A judge ruled in your favor, and then that decision was overturned by the Court of Appeals, right?
That's correct. We had a 2-week trial. Both sides presented dozens of witnesses, I think hundreds of exhibits, and the district judge found an extensive opinion that the law imposed unconstitutional burdens on the right to vote, especially for people from low income or other vulnerable backgrounds, and also had a disproportionate impact on racial minorities. That decision was overturned by a 3-judge panel of the Seventh Circuit. But within days after that panel issued its decision, another judge in the Seventh Circuit, Judge Richard Posner, on his own, asked the entire 10-judge Seventh Circuit Court to review that panel's decision. And the judges of that circuit divided 5-5 as to whether to overturn or revisit that panel decision.
Wow. So then you took it to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's where we are at today. The U.S. Supreme Court has decided to reject this appeal. And where does that leave us as far as your case?
That's correct. So today the Supreme Court decided that they would not review the Seventh Circuit panel's judgment. We are obviously disappointed in that outcome. But like other cases in which the Supreme Court does not explain why it isn't taking a case, it didn't do so in this case. So in no way does the Supreme Court's decision create any kind of binding law throughout the country. So right now, our principal two claims that were resolved by the Seventh Circuit, that part of the case is likely to be over. And as far as next steps go, we are assessing all of our options, including challenges to either Wisconsin's law or other states' laws based on other legal theories.
Well, and you have an election coming up there on April 7th in Wisconsin. I understand that you were asking for an emergency motion to block this new voter ID requirement from going into effect for that election.
That's right. Right after the Supreme Court declined to take our case, we filed an emergency motion with the Seventh Circuit because of the upcoming April 7th elections, in which voting has already started. And we argued that imposing voter ID this close to an election, actually in the middle of an election, would result in the disenfranchisement of voters who have already voted, as well as cause untold chaos and confusion among election officials and voters about what's required to vote. Last fall, the state tried to impose voter ID at the last minute before the November 2014 elections. And the Supreme Court blocked that effort. So given what the state tried to do last time, we wanted to make sure the state wouldn't be able to get away with it this time. So we filed a motion. And thankfully, the state, within hours of our motion, wisely agreed with us and voluntarily stated that it would not impose voter ID for this election.
And so when will these new voter ID requirements go into effect?
Well, presumably, the best person to ask would be the Attorney General of Wisconsin. Presumably, it will go into effect after the elections on April 7th, barring any future challenge to the law.
Are you planning any future challenge to the law?
We're assessing all of our options.
So, in Wisconsin, it seems like this is a pretty political issue. You've got a governor, Scott Walker, who faced a popular challenge a couple of years ago. Is he seemed to be a big proponent of this voter ID law?
He signed the law into effect. But it shouldn't be a political issue. Everyone deserves the right to vote, regardless of who they want to vote for. And, you know, every politician, no matter what political party they're from, shouldn't be trying to manipulate the rules to decide what voters, they like and don't like, or what voters they want to vote and not vote. So it really should not be a political issue.
I understand there are some other states that have challenges to voter ID laws that are possibly headed to the Supreme Court. What's the status of those?
Well, the ACLU is currently litigating a case in North Carolina challenging its strict voter ID law. We're having a trial this summer for that case. And in Texas, the ACLU has filed an amicus brief and a voter ID challenge there. Right now, that case is before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is still considering the case.
And in the Texas and North Carolina cases, they're a little different from Wisconsin, right, because they were subject to the Voting Rights Act provisions that were struck down in 2013?
Well, that's right. And as soon as the Supreme Court held that the Voting Rights Act could no longer require states to pre-clear their voting restrictions with the federal government, then North Carolina wasted no time in rushing to impose voter ID on its citizens, as well as Texas.
What are the implications of these voter ID laws and the fact that the Supreme Court seems to be upholding them for democracy in the United States?
Well, it needs to be emphasized that, that is for now. The Supreme Court had an opportunity in recent history to revisit that ruling. But what the Supreme Court did today does not change the fact that millions of Americans continue to lack the forms of ID that are set forth in these laws. These laws, there's a common misconception that these laws allow any kind of photo ID to work. That's not true at all. These laws specifically exclude certain types of ID that low-income people rely on in their everyday lives, and it's done, purposely. So we're going to continue to, we're still going to fight these laws around the country. We're not slowing down, and we are hopeful that that the fever will break, and that legislators will stop going out of their way to make it harder for people to vote.
And this law in Wisconsin, it says there may be up to 300,000 voters in Wisconsin that are impacted. Does that mean that number of people could potentially be disenfranchised in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. That's exactly what the district court found, and that's what we're facing now in Wisconsin. And so we need to, do what we can to fight these kinds of laws around the country.
Interestingly, here in Oregon, our legislature recently passed what was known as the Motor Voter Bill, which automatically registers people to vote when they get their driver's license or ID card. The estimate was that it will potentially add 300,000 people to the voter rolls. Are there any attempts like that in other parts of the country that you know of to add rather than remove people from voter rolls?
Not that I am personally aware of. These kinds of